Hello and welcome to Quilt Achieviate's Market Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at Quilt Achieviate. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you're listening on, or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Edelson Shahini, investment manager based out of our Birmingham office, and this week I am pleased to be joined by regular guest Richard Carter, a head of fixed interest research, and Mamta Valecha, a consumer discretionary analyst. Good morning to you both. Richard, we've seen the headlines over the last week or so about the UK's long-term borrowing cost being the highest since 1998. We've also seen a spike in yields of late, which ties in with this. There is somewhat a lack of love in the UK bond market, it's fair to say. Unfavorably, we've also seen rather weak recent GDP figures for the UK and future growth prospects not looking great either. Clearly, this is not a desirable combination, particularly in light of October's budget announcement with the increased taxing and spending plans. We've seen sterling weakening significantly versus the dollar as well. Reading beyond the headlines, what are your views on this? Is this a rather delayed reaction to Rachel Reeves's budget that we're seeing? And how do you see this impacting the UK economy, markets and investors alike?
Yeah, morning. I mean, it's been a bit of a wild ride for gilt investors, certainly over the last week or so. Not a great start to the year. The government's very much been putting out that this is a sort of global move in bond markets, and it's not UK really sort of UK specific. That's mainly true. I think had Donald Trump, for example, not won the US presidential election, this sort of thing wouldn't be happening. The main concern for markets is that, you know, US economy is going to remain very strong. Trump's policies are sort of quite inflationary, and the chances of sort of rate cuts by the Federal Reserve, you know, central bank in the States, are sort of rapidly diminishing. And that's the big picture behind this. It's not just a UK thing. That said, last year, European bonds, actually did okay, behaved fairly well. There is a bit of an issue with the UK, though, that inflation here is quite sticky. There's not much growth, as you mentioned, but inflation's quite sticky. The Bank of England's dragging its heels on cutting interest rates because they're worried about inflation, in contrast to the ECB. And then obviously the fiscal side's not brilliant. There was a lot of extra borrowing at the latest budget, and also a worry that lots of extra borrowing without much likely follow through in terms of, you know, generating growth in the economy. So that's not a good situation. And obviously the government's, you know, a bit under pressure. What does it mean, for the economy and, you know, the other things? Yeah, it's not good news for the economy for sure. You know, lower sterling means higher inflation, all things being equal. Higher interest rates, you know, bad for mortgages and bad for consumer sentiment. It's not Liz Truss, you know, Mark II just yet, but certainly it is a concern. And it generates a lot of uncertainty for investors, particularly in the domestic UK economy. One silver lining, I suppose, for a UK investor, if you're investing globally, including in the States particularly, that weakness in sterling is benefiting you because you're benefiting from a rise in the dollar. So it's not all bad news, but it's not great. We're not in full-blown crisis mode yet, but clearly, if it carries on, then the sort of risks of the Bank of England needing to intervene, potentially in gilt markets, does increase. But for now, I think the focus will be on the government, you know, their statements and promises of fiscal rectitude.
Yeah, excellent. Trump is yet to take office, although, as you've alluded to as well, as the president of the US, that hasn't stopped the tension turning towards him, and really, it hasn't stopped him from making a range of remarks. So this ranges from his policies on tariffs and immigration to his push for the US to buy Greenland and renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, as well as taking control of the Panama Canal. There is a sense of him acting as the big bully in the playground, although we know he's a transactional man. He does like to portray any wins as being his. And likely we will not see these things materialize to the extent he would like to have everyone believe. At the same time, he has said he would like NATO members and allies to help build and shore up the US, as well as that of the individual NATO members' military defence equipment. So it does feel to me he's setting the tone for the prospect for win-win scenarios and doing business with allies. What are your general views on Trump and the next 4 years of his second term? And what would this mean for the US and the global economy and markets generally?
Yeah, I mean, some of what he says around, obviously, Greenland and Panama and all the rest of it is probably just hard to take it too seriously, although, you know, there's always a concern that he does actually do something about it. I think clearly NATO countries need to step up their spending on you know, military hardware, given the threat from what's going on Russia and Ukraine. Although, you know, getting to 5% GDP, you know, defence spending is virtually impossible at the moment, but you know, clearly if they head in a higher direction, that might you know, sort of assuage his sort of concerns. What do I think about Trump and all? I think we need to be, as everyone probably is now, expecting the unexpected. Some very strange stuff is obviously going to come out of Trump's mouth and, you know, social media accounts and all the rest of it, and Elon Musk and everyone else too. I think one person I sort of respect really said, listen, he's going to say a lot of strange stuff. Just focus on what he does, not what he says, because often that is not quite as extreme or not quite as severe. We got through 4 years with him in the White House before relatively unscathed. Let's hope we do so again. And I think from an investment point of view, you know, he wants a strong US economy, you know, potentially at the expense of other countries by putting tariffs up. But I think he is market friendly in a sense. He wants companies to be doing well. He wants, you know, rules and regulations to be relaxed. And I think from that point of view, if you focus on, you know, global economy and the opportunities for investing in the US, then investors can be reasonably confident about it. But I think if you just get buffeted around by the latest thing he says, it could become, you know, quite difficult. So I think, again, it's focus on valuations, focus on the global economy, and focus on sort of long-term global investing.
Thank you, Richard. Mamta, if I may turn to you now, please. So on Elon Musk, the world's richest person, he has become very close to Trump and he has been trying to exert his views on weight in politics, not only the US, but also on this side of the Atlantic Ocean. Clearly, he has personal interests and arguably conflicts of interest. And he has seen his wealth increase significantly since Trump's win, including through his company Tesla. Both can be volatile and impulsive characters. However, it would be no surprise to see fractures in the relationship and even perhaps clashes leading to a fallout. With Tesla being one of the stocks under your close watch, has this affected or altered your view of the company, its prospect, and its owner?
Yes, lots to unpack here. Elon Musk's support for Donald Trump has given him a powerful voice in the incoming administration, and the shares have responded by rallying strongly since. You know, because equally in an increasingly competitive and complex geopolitical environment, investors do acknowledge the importance of the US maintaining leadership in technologies such as AI, robotics, and also robotaxis, for example. But it does also pose the question as to what extent Musk's relationship with Trump should be considered when ascribing value to Tesla shares. Both Musk and Trump have strong personalities, to put it nicely, and could lead to a very volatile relationship, you know, which in turn could lead to turbulence in the share price of Tesla. With that said, we like to stay grounded and not lose sight of fundamentals. 80% of Tesla's business today is from selling BEVs, but only 20 to 25% of the share price is ascribed to the automotive business. Put it differently, 75 to 80% of the share price value is related to options like Tesla's full self-driving software, robotaxi, robotics, and also the energy business. And apart from the energy business, all are unproven businesses today. Tesla reported Q4 delivery figures at the start of the month, which fell below expectations, which had already started to drift lower towards the end of 2024. This also comes despite various incentives being offered by Tesla to boost demand. So this will not bode well for margins and also free cash flow, which will be reported at the end of January. It also means Tesla misses the growth guidance set for their financial year 2024, and this may be the start of more disappointments to come and perhaps will refocus investors' minds back to fundamentals.
Trump's policies around climate change, ESG, energy, etc., and his proposed tariffs and arguably can arguably be seen as both a positive or negative, depending on what argument you look at, for Tesla and the whole sector. Now, Tesla's share price movement upwards has certainly brushed any concerns off. What is your investment thesis and outlook on the wider electric vehicles market in the US and beyond?
Yeah, so EV demand globally was under pressure in 2024 as affordability came into question and, you know, cheap China EVs continued to flood the market. As a result, you know, production plans came down quite a bit in Europe and the US. But production updates for 2025 produced by the IHS, who is an information provider for the automotive industry, show that this year will be no different. 2025 will also bring in fresh problems on both sides of the Atlantic. So in the EU, the next stage of the CO2 emissions regulation comes into force, which is asking for a further 15% reduction in CO2 emissions compared to 2021 to bring it down to 93.6 grams. So failure to meet the respective targets means OEMs face potentially huge fines. In the US, reduced incentives and changing regulations will make 2025 a difficult year for EVs. So if the incoming administration decides to levy tariffs on imports from, say, Mexico and Canada, this would add to the cost base of US manufacturers by about 5% of the revenue. And this, you know, could force the sector to make tough decisions between, you know, reducing volumes or increasing consumer pricing, eating into the industry's already declining margins. Now, with regards to Tesla specifically, we believe the biggest potential impact of Musk being on the administration is an acceleration in the testing timeline for its FSD software. So currently, Tesla faces the challenge of obtaining state-by-state approval for autonomous driving, which can be a cumbersome process. So the idea is a unified federal regulation could streamline this, allowing Tesla to push forward more rapidly with its FSD testing. However, it is important to note that state approval can still pose limitations, and regulation isn't the primary barrier holding Tesla back today. The current FSD software is classified as a level 2 driving assistance system, which means it requires constant supervision by the driver. For true autonomy, Tesla systems need to reach at least level 4, if not level 5, which represents full autonomy without human intervention. And finally, I think most importantly, let's not forget the consumer still needs to want this product in order for it to be a success.
Thank you, Mamta and Richard, to you both for your great insights and to all of you for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We'd love to hear from our listeners. So please review the show now, wherever you're listening, and share it on your socials and tag us at QualtAchieveIt. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, head over to our website, www.QualtAchieveIt.com. where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on markets, news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. Finally, do you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast? If so, simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We'd love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again, Richard and Mamta, for your time, and to all of you for listening. See you next time.